It's Wednesday, March 10th, and the next 24 hours are going to be stimulating. We start here. The House stands ready to pass a finalized rescue package, and President Biden stands ready to sign it.
Officials are not going to say a date certain, but they do know that people want them.
But how quickly is money about to get out the door? Is the problem voter fraud or just too many darn people voting?
There's an effort to get rid of those drop boxes.
Why a bunch of states who successfully handled huge numbers of early votes are now trying to drastically cut back early voting. And how close is your local pharmacy?
An eight-hour trip just to find vaccines.
What the vaccination effort looks like when you're hours away from the nearest shot. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
How can you assure Americans that relief will come and come soon?
You all asked the most interesting questions. Have you ever known anyone in the history of the United States of America that could be president and assure exactly what the Congress is going to do? So I can't assure anything, but I can tell you what I expect.
It was late December of last year that President Trump signed the most recent COVID relief bill to give aid to Americans. Well, ever since the hours after that, President Biden has been on a personal mission to pass something even bigger.
This bill is just the first step, a down payment in addressing the crisis. Crises, more than one, that we're in.
He campaigned on this. He personally pushed for it in his first days at the White House. He's basically said this is the single most important item on his to-do list in his first months in office.
Good afternoon. It's a good day today.
Well, after fits and starts, his moment has arrived.
Today, I can say we've taken one more giant step forward in delivering on that promise that help was on the way.
Today, after weeks of wrangling, the House is expected to pass this relief bill, and with that, it goes to President Biden for his signature. So the question here is no longer about politics. That's done. It's about whether the U.S. government can actually deliver this aid quickly and reliably. Let's go to ABC's Karen Travers at the White House. Karen, I guess it's not all done, because I want to know, how is this going to play out today? Like, how quickly could this all go down?
Yeah, they still have to cross the finish line. The White House is not going to get pinpointed on what specific day or hour, but they want to sign this before the end of the week. And Brad, March 14th, Sunday, has always been this deadline that's been circled on calendars here at the White House and up on Capitol Hill. It's an unofficial deadline. They didn't have to get it done by Sunday, but they wanted to, because that's when some of the federal unemployment benefits were set to expire. And officials said that they did not want to have any gap in that coverage. They didn't want to have those millions of Americans miss even one paycheck like that, the additional money they were getting, just because Congress had not gotten it together.
As soon as I get it.
So the House will pass this today. Then it's a question of how quickly they can send it down from one end of Pennsylvania Avenue to this end of Pennsylvania Avenue. The White House says that the president will sign it as soon as he gets it. Look for a signing ceremony. This is a big deal, a BFD, if you want to quote President Biden from back in the Obama administration. This is, as you say, it's his top priority. It's his first legislative win, and they're going to do it up. And this is going to be a very big moment for them.
How much money will people get, Karen? Like, do we, because it's not just even stimulus checks at this point.
Sure. That's the big one, though. That's what everybody's been focused on. And because right. You hear that and you think, what is coming directly to me? $1,400 for Americans making up to $75,000 a year. If you get up to $80,000 for a single income filer, that number gets a little bit smaller. So then for couples, you get up to $150,000. It maxes out the income cap at $160,000. The White House says that, yes, while that was more targeted than previous rounds of COVID relief, that it's still 98% of the people who got it the last time. So they feel okay with that.
And one more thing. This plan is historic. Taken all together, this plan is going to make it possible to cut child poverty in half. Let me say it again. It's significant, historic. We'll cut child poverty in half.
But then it's, you know, other things, too. It's child tax credits. It's subsidies for child care. This is really a bill that gives a significant amount of aid to lower income Americans.
Sign it off. Let's go. I need the help. My kids need to eat.
And White House officials will say this is a very big difference from the bills that were signed during the Trump administration, which they said gave money but to the wrong people, that it was too heavily focused on businesses and corporations, and that higher wage earners were getting money and didn't need it.
It would be really nice to get a little support so that I don't become homeless.
They want to see this money go to lower income wage earners because they feel that those are the types of people that, one, need it, but two, will also use that money and spend it on something, not save it for later or invest it. They'll actually get it back into the economy.
But, and that's what I'm wondering, Karen, is that last mile of getting it into the person's pocket? Like, what are the challenges the Biden administration will face here? Because we heard about, like, dead people getting checks. We heard about other very living people getting their checks way too late. Mm-hmm. Is that unavoidable, or is that something the Biden administration has plans for?
Yeah, I mean, we even seeing experiences on my little street here in Washington of some neighbor getting the other neighbor's check and not understanding how it was supposed to get to the other neighbor. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were a lot of glitches in the system.
The IRS and Bureau of the Fiscal Service are building on lessons learned from previous rounds.
The administration says that they are working overtime to make sure that there are as few glitches as possible.
The first batch of payments will go to all taxpayers who provided direct deposit in their 2019 or 2020 returns.
They want to make sure that more people are doing this through electronic payments because that'll get out faster than the checks.
And any update on whether or not he wants his signature on there like former President Trump demanded?
Well, we are doing everything in our power to expedite the payments and not delay them, which is why the president's name will not appear on the memo line.
These checks are expected to go out by the end of the month, but Brad, officials are not going to say a date certain. But they do know that people want them. They're really eager for them. So March 10th, today, the expectation is just about 3 weeks they could get these out.
I'm going to say, you anticipated my question. When does everyone get their check?
So everybody wants to know.
Exactly. That's the real question. While I have you, though, Karen, like yesterday we were talking about how nice it is to be able to hug someone after you've both been vaccinated, or like even if one of you has been vaccinated, then you can still take off your mask with it. Well, you pressed the White House on something perhaps more critical of, like, does that mean anything changes in places like a school?
It does not.
Go ahead, Karen.
Some questions on the CDC guidelines yesterday.
Mm-hmm. So the question I asked the White House yesterday is, if you have a vaccinated grandmother who can hug their unvaccinated grandchildren without masks,
how do you apply that same standard to schools?
Well, these guidelines were, I don't want to get over my skis here as a non, I am not a doctor, these guidelines were very specific to what recommendations made for people's homes, right? So,
and the White House response to that, Brad, is that what people do in their private homes, what family units do there, is not the same as kids in a classroom, and it is not the same as employees in a workplace.
These were not guidelines for a workplace, whether it is the White House or a business or a school.
But I have to say, you know, just anecdotally talking to friends who are in the same boat as me, where their kids are still doing school at home, this was a good thing to hear earlier this week that, yes, you can hug your grandparents, but it's like, okay, well then if people in schools are vaccinated and the kids aren't, isn't that the same thing?
When can we see guidelines as more people get vaccinated then applied to schools or applied to workplaces with these same standards?
Well, they will continue to review, as Dr. Walensky has said.
The one thing they keep saying is that as more people get vaccinated, we're still only around 10% of the population. As that number goes up, then they will reassess. But Brad, schools, local districts, state school officials, they are waiting really impatiently, I think, to get more of that guidance so they can start making their plans for the end of the school year.
Right. And it's not just, like you said, it's not just a matter of feel good stuff. Like there is questions of how many kids can be packed this close together. And by the way, human connection and human touch and like meeting your friends in person, kind of a big part of childhood development.
Yes. All right. You can't stop little kids from hugging each other.
You can't do it. Like, I see you wrangling your kids. All right. Karen Travers at the White House. Thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, we saw what happened when lots of people were able to vote by mail. Well, that's got to end, according to several swing states. More after the break. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/start here today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/start here. We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there should be no compromise. Don't go back to that one doctor. You know the type. Like, I've had this person before that doesn't actually listen to you or who seems just in a rush to end your appointment that you spent months making. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. You can search by location, availability, and insurance, so no compromises here, because with ZocDoc, you got more options than you know. We're talking about booking appointments with tens of thousands of top-rated, patient-reviewed, credible doctors and specialists. Go to ZocDoc.com/start here and download the ZocDoc app for free, then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/start here. ZocDoc.com/start here.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
Earlier this week, the governor of Iowa signed a law that would make it harder to cast a ballot before Election Day. No longer can your county just send you an application for an absentee ballot. Now you've got to request not just your ballot, you have to request the application for it as well.
Your voice, your vote, and while the election may be over, the voting process in Arizona is still front and center.
The Arizona legislature is considering a bill requiring voters to get their mail ballot notarized, like by a notary. Another bill would make it so that if you mailed your ballot on the Friday before Election Day, it would be considered too late, even if it arrives at the election office before Election Day.
Ballot boxes, no excuse absentee voting could go away.
It seems to me we should always be taking a look at how we can make improvements.
Only when a particular candidate loses does anybody seem concerned about the structure.
Welcome to the new war being waged way before the next presidential election. And it's a war that could be fought the hardest in the state of Georgia, where we find ABC Steve Osunsami. Steve, what's on the table and how could it affect voters?
So, as you just described, there are bills that are currently at the State House right now that are being debated between lawmakers that would, first of all, one of the big ones is you now will need, if this is passed by the governor, an excuse, a good reason to vote by mail.
If that bill is approved, only some people will be able to vote absentee. Those who are 75 and older, have a physical disability, or are out of town.
Some other provisions, they want you to include with your mail-in ballot a copy of your ID, of your driver's license, as if most people have a printer. Not everyone has a printer sitting around to do that.
I'm standing in line. I don't trust the drop box. I want to make sure that my vote is, you know, get counted, and I want to make.
And then some of the other things that they're talking about, Brad. Do you remember those drop boxes that were outside county offices?
Sure.
Yeah. So they're
the big look. They look like mailboxes, but they're not. They're just
right. Right. Well, one of the provisions is to get rid of those. So, in the name of security, even though there are cameras pointed at those things 24/7 and videos rolling 24/7, like these security cameras, there's an effort to get rid of those drop boxes. So that if you have a mail-in vote, you've got to trust the mail to send in your vote.
Okay, so then what's the reaction? What's the debate been like there?
And made sure that every vote matters.
Stop voter suppression!
In Georgia, there have been protests at the courthouse almost every day.
At one point during their 12-hour planned protest, the group sat in solidarity with chains at the Capitol entrance while lawmakers arrived to work. The group told me the tape over their mouth represents their voices being silenced with HB 531.
We're hopeful that this pressure will help, even if it's, you know, editing the bill. Or
people have been down at the courthouse accusing Republican lawmakers of being racist, accusing them of trying to stop the black and brown vote.
My constituency thinks that there were a lot of people who voted absentee ballot that may have voted more than once.
I understand your constituency believes that it is because they were told that that is true. But isn't that a crisis of leadership of our presidency who spread those,
Senator Harrell,
those lies?
Senator Harrell.
But the problem is that in Georgia, the legislature is controlled by Republicans.
Supporters of the legislation call it common sense reform. Mike Dugan is the Senate Majority Leader.
Right now, we are, in essence, running three elections simultaneously. The cost is prohibitive.
And the only person who can really stop this now is the governor of Georgia, and it's unclear whether or not he will do this.
That's interesting, Steve, because, yeah, now that I think about it, President Trump and a lot of national Republicans were saying, hey, this election was rigged. And yet, like, to a person, the governors and the secretaries of state of these red states were saying, no, like, we did our job right. All the ballots here were cast completely legally. Like, we've checked. And yet it's now those elected officials that are considering passing these stricter laws.
Well, I will say this. Georgia's lieutenant governor, he has really, he is still saying the same thing he's been saying for months.
The governor, lieutenant governor, and speaker of the House, we've all three said very out loud that we do not support the elimination of no excuse absentee ballots. So that portion of the bill has, in my opinion, no chance of actually becoming a law.
That this is not needed, that the elections were secure, that Joe Biden, Raphael Warnock, and John Ossoff won their elections fair and square. And he's been making the argument to state lawmakers that, you know, if you're going to question the integrity of these particular races, then what about the races that you guys won? The governor of Georgia, he has come out saying that he doesn't think there's a need to change the no excuse rule, where you don't need an excuse to get an absentee ballot. Now, you know, what he will do might be something different.
I've supported the legal process that him or any other campaign can go through in this state. But at the end of the day, I also have to follow the laws and the Constitution.
Because this is a man who took a beating from President Trump.
I try to vote sometimes for the lesser of the two evils. That's what happened when I voted for Brian Kemp over Stacey Abrams.
Who has heard it endlessly from people in his own party.
He's not going to get your vote again either, is he?
Who has needed a security detail, you know, because of the threats against his life and his family's life because of his stance on the election. And who hopes to win election again. And so this may be his path to recovery with Republicans by signing some of these bills into law. We'll see.
The Senate Government Committee voting to pass four bills, among them bills aiming to widen the recount margin in Arizona and allow anyone who can pay to request one of their own.
One measure requires election officials to throw out votes cast in the wrong precinct. Another bans the practice of third-party ballot collection or allowing someone else to turn in your absentee ballot for you.
Our freedom to vote is under attack.
But it must be said, Brad, that without question, they are trying to make it harder to vote. There's just no way around saying that. You can make the security argument all you want, but that's what's happening.
And President Trump even said outright last year, if it is this easy to vote absentee or by mail, Republicans will lose a lot more elections. Now, Trump did lose and two other Republican senators lost. Well, lots of rule changes being proposed. Steve Osunsami there in Georgia. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
If it feels like there are more COVID-19 vaccinations happening near you than there were recently, that's because there are.
On January 20th, there was a seven-day average of 890,000 shots per day. Today, we're averaging 2.17 million shots per day.
According to CDC data, every single state is administering way more doses this month than they were last month. That's mainly because there's more vaccine doses being shipped to states. Last week, the White House says about 15 million doses were shipped from Pfizer and Moderna. This week, it's closer to 16 million. It's going up. And that doesn't even count another 2.7 million doses being sent from the government directly to pharmacies. So why does it still feel so freaking difficult to schedule an appointment in so many areas? Let's bring in ABC's Soorin Kim, one of our data journalists. And Soorin, you've been specifically looking at pharmacies, right? How important are they to this effort?
So this could be where this battle is going to be won or lost. You know, in urban areas, you might have mass vaccination sites set up by FEMA and state governments that are vaccinating thousands of people a day.
Officials say both of the California sites will be allotted 42,000 vaccines a week by the federal government.
We have 15 lanes of traffic, and we're set up for drive-through here.
But in most of the country, shots are happening at local clinics and local pharmacies.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I'm going to start with the people that have their appointment at 9 o'clock.
And that is going to be the case, especially in the coming weeks and months, as vaccines become available to the wider public.
6,500 locations across the country are participating in this. Walgreens, Rite Aid, CVS, other major chains.
If these pharmacies are such a big deal, like you said, because of how accessible they are, then great. Like, why not send all the vaccines to them? Like, what are the challenges, I guess, that pharmacies are going to be facing here?
Well, they seem accessible, but to many other parts of the country, they're not. And we call them pharmacy deserts.
Pharmacy desert could both mean that you have to travel a long distance, or it's not available to you, or just the services are just not in great enough supply that you have easy access.
We took a look at the data and found more than 150 counties where there's no pharmacy at all. You know, we saw that there are far fewer pharmacies in poor, predominantly non-white neighborhoods in rural parts of the country than in wider and wealthier areas. And that's especially the case for chain pharmacies, where a lot of the federal and state resources are going.
We saw these deserts of testing exist where populations that we knew are at the greatest risk of complication from COVID also exist in places that just had no testing. They had to drive many miles before they could get a test. It's these same issues at play again with immunization.
People from all over used to come to work here.
We talked to a guy in Presidio, Texas, who was looking to make an 8-hour trip just to find vaccines.
8 hours?
Because of my age, I was really scared about this. You know, I lost some family. I have family in Mexico, and I lost a few family members, you know.
Where he lives, there's no pharmacy around him, and he couldn't get appointments at local clinics.
We are so far from everywhere. I mean, it's bad.
The closest pharmacy where he could get vaccinated is in Alpine, which is an hour and a half drive away. But even the local pharmacies there have just now started getting doses.
Living out here so remotely, have you been concerned about getting the vaccine?
Yes, because there's been a lot of COVID cases, so I'm like, I need to take it because I don't want to get sick. So.
There is a local clinic in Presidio, and that's where he actually ended up getting vaccinated, but it was only after weeks of desperate searching and waiting.
I feel lucky. I feel like a relief, you know, I'm with more hope.
So yesterday I got the call that 600 vaccines have been transferred to our clinic in Presidio.
But even for that local clinic, it's a difficult process where, you know, the doctors have to drive an hour and a half to bring the doses from Alpine.
Today is Friday and it's around 6 in the morning.
Oftentimes, they don't know that they're getting doses for Presidio until the last minute.
600 for new patients and 210 for second doses.
But can I just say, Soorin, like, I live in a big city and I walked into a pharmacy like for a different prescription, and it was a madhouse. And they're like two people getting vaccinated. And granted, like, there are these big mass vaccination sites you were talking about. But is the problem really just like rural areas? There's just too much space between pharmacies, or is there something in how they operate as well?
Actually, there's another type of pharmacy desert, and it's right in the middle of cities.
Days after some Southside residents found out the CVS would be closing, there are calls for a boycott of the pharmacy by the neighborhood's aldermen.
I will not support you if you close this store here.
Even if there are multiple pharmacies in your neighborhood, it might not be easy to get an appointment with your neighborhood pharmacy because those pharmacies serve far too many people.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing these urban pharmacy deserts primarily in poorer, predominantly Black or Hispanic neighborhoods, more so than in wider and wealthier neighborhoods in these cities.
They just said that they were leaving and we could go to 7th and 9th and Western.
which is a bus ride for most people, unless you drive. I drive, but most people don't.
And cities are really trying to bridge these gaps by partnering up with community organizations like churches and schools that have relationship with these community members. And some cities are even offering rideshare programs with Lyft or Uber to help people get to vaccine sites.
Yeah, I think as we've seen these disparities in vaccination rates, we've seen that white people have a higher vaccination rate than a lot of communities of color. And a lot of that gets chalked up to, well, there's just people that don't want to get the vaccine. When you look at this data, Sue Rin, it seems obvious that access to medical care in your own language, in your community, without having to drive 4 hours, that's also a big part of the picture. It's fascinating stuff. Sue Rin Kim, thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
And one last thing. Normalcy is what everyone's been waiting for, right? A normal world without a pandemic, political norms. But it hits different when normal is used to describe your skin.
No more normal for Unilever. The consumer packaged goods company is dropping the word from its beauty and personal care products.
This week, Unilever, the parent company of lots of personal care brands like Dove, Tresemme, Axe, says it will no longer use the word normal to describe its products. Like, there are shampoos that say, for normal to greasy hair. Well, what is normal? The lotion for normal to oily skin. You can see how certain groups or even entire races can get written off as abnormal, difficult to make beautiful. Remember, Unilever was the company that directed a South Asian brand to stop calling its skin lightening cream Fair and Lovely last year. It's now called Glow and Lovely, but critics say, you're still selling skin lightening cream.
And in 2017, the company faced a social media outcry over an advert for Dove body wash,
showing an African-American woman removing her brown shirt, appearing to reveal herself as a white woman in a light-colored top.
In fact, it wasn't until yesterday that Unilever committed to not digitally altering its models' skin colors. And that's the challenge for beauty companies going forward. They say their users want more positive body imagery, less editing of models. They say there's a hunger for more celebration of the skin and hair types that make us all different. But do these companies actually believe their own customers? And are they willing to change more than their labels as a result? It's Just Cosmetics, says everyone in our country where cosmetics brings in $100 billion a year. That said, if you're trying to live your life solely in audio form, we can help you. We are smart speaker friendly. You can listen to Start Here every day on whatever device you like. More on all these stories at abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.